I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Inside Sources. Where KSL offers Utah deeper insights on the news. Host Boyd Matheson divides rage from reason and elevates the conversation on issues crucial to our community on KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
One of those crucial conversations that we talk about on this program is how Congress has just perpetually ceded its authority and its powers to the executive branch for decades now, both left and right. And, of course, we know that the executive branch is all too willing to take that power when Congress abdicates it and gives it over to the executive branch. And we see that in so many places as it relates to executive orders where, again, if Congress doesn't act, the president surely will. And then it ends up in the court and we wonder why. There has been so much politicization of the courts. That is exactly why. That's the path. One area that we haven't focused on recently that I'm really excited to get to today is when it comes to war powers. Really thrilled to be joined by Anthony Markham from R Street Institute. He is a resident fellow there at R Street Institute, our good friends there, and focuses on federal judiciary and separation of power disputes. Anthony, thanks for joining us today.
No, thank you for having me.
You had a wonderful piece when it comes to war powers, how Congress, I think, just doesn't need a seat at the table. They need a voice at the table. Then they need a vote at the table. And we've let so much of that just slip away.
Well, that's absolutely right. And I think one of the, you know, you mentioned this in your the beginning of the segment here, Congress has consistently ceded so much of its authority when it comes to war powers disputes. And the Constitution envisions a deliberate divide. Of course, the president is the commander-in-chief, but the Constitution actually gives Congress a number of authorities. They, of course, have the power to declare war. They're to raise and support armies through appropriations. They're to make rules for the government and regulation of the land and naval forces. They're coming up with the regulations. Congress has a significant role. And throughout history, Congress has often just ceded its authority to the executive branch, not even by declaring war, but often through authorizations and broadly written statements, really permission slips for the president to conduct military operations across the globe.
Yeah, and I think that is such a vital thing for us to recognize that sometimes we applaud and say, oh, well, that's a good thing. We needed to do that. But how we do those things actually matter because it's not always going to be ideal circumstances. And if Congress continues to abdicate and cede its power to the executive branch, we end up with some real imbalance, some real life issues. You wrote about this in your piece that as the continued war power imbalance progresses, senators and representatives end up with some real issues.
That's right. I mean, the more Congress, and especially when it comes to war powers, are more willing to cede their power, and they do it in a number of ways. Of course, you have incredibly broad authorizations, like the 2001 and 2002 AUMFs, which are still often cited by administrations past and today to justify a number of operations across the country, not just in Afghanistan or Iraq. But on top of that, you have appropriations. You have given the military significant firepower and with little oversight and for the executive branch to really conduct operations however it sees fit. There's often little follow-up when Congress gives these authorizations. And the problem is Congress is the most democratically accountable to the public. These are the people we vote for every 2 or 6 years. And when we go to war and when we go overseas to defend the United States, they come from these districts. They are their constituents, and there are direct consequences. And so this is something lawmakers should take more seriously because it is their constituents that are fighting these battles.
Yeah, and I just want to reemphasize that. I think that is such an important point that you've made, Anthony, that in order to really have these checks and balances, in order for this to really work right, there does have to be that accountability back. And if the executive branch, if a president is just doing sweeping things, that's a big broad brush, as opposed to a senator or a representative in the House that has someone in their district or in their state that is being impacted or sent overseas or out on one of these missions or into one of these conflicts or wars. Having that kind of personal connection and that kind of personal representation really is key, especially as we go into some times that are going to be really troubling.
That's absolutely right. And one of the reasons I became so interested in this topic really stems from where I grew up. I grew up in a very small town in eastern Ohio, and it has this infamous reputation of having the most casualties during the Vietnam War per capita of any other town in the United States. Just this little small town in Ohio, and it was kind of interesting to see how impacted the small community was by the Vietnam War, largely a war that they had no control of or no insight on the foreign policy implications of it, what was going on in the region. These men either volunteered or were drafted to serve, and largely they have one member of Congress to defend them, but that person had a huge responsibility to represent their interests and concerns to the federal level, and if they're not willing to do that, then that's such a significant problem for our local communities and other pockets of the country.
So critical, so vital. Great piece. Anthony Markham, again, resident fellow at R Street Institute. When it comes to war powers, Congress needs a seat at the table, and they need to be held accountable, which requires Congress to do its job and actually take votes and have debates in front of the American people when it comes to a lot of these military issues. Anthony, thanks for joining us today.
All right. Thank you for having me.
All right. We're going to take a quick step aside. Coming up next, we're going to talk about political courage. We're keeping our eye right now. First Lady Jill Biden is speaking in front of U.S. troops in the U.K. President Biden is expected to speak next. We'll cover it live right here on KSL News Radio. Stay with us.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLpodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.